Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Managing your money is something that almost every adult needs to do. But where and how do people learn about personal finance? Some of us get an education from our parents, some from school, but the vast majority of people seem to be making it up as they go along, and a lot of people are making mistakes. Today, three different experts will share their personal finance wisdom, and we'll also explore the gender gap when it comes to financial literacy, the challenges women face. My first guest today is Nanette Joel Beach, better known as Joey, the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. She lives in Ankeny. Hello, Joey.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
And it's pretty clear in reading your book that the inspiration that you had for writing this book and for taking control of your own financial literacy was your mother's experience. Can you tell me a little bit about what your mom went through?
Well, she had three children, and she had a husband with addiction and fidelity issues. And it came to a point where she simply could no longer stay. And in leaving, or having him leave, she was faced with virtually no income, three children, and a house to keep up, and he did not contribute. So she had to, really, it was a struggle for many years for her to get on her feet. She had to go to a lot of other outside resources to help her keep a roof over our head for many years. And so as a result, I learned at a very early age just how important money was.
You also feel like she stayed in that marriage for longer than she wanted to because of the financial considerations, that the finances were a trap for her in some ways.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, a big part of that, as a mother of three, she was really concerned with how is she going to keep a roof over her kids' heads. So It was a huge factor. I'm confident that she would have made other choices had she had more financial options.
Having had that experience, having watched what your mom went through, and she did keep a roof over your head and successfully raise you and your siblings, what do you think you learned from observing that?
Oh, a lot. Well, one, just the basics of how important finances are to your life and your style, and that life doesn't always go as planned. So if you manage your money so you have a little backup, or dare I say, as she called it, she used stronger words, but go to heck fund, where she many times in her life wished she could have told her husband or a boss or other people to, you know, go away because they weren't treating her right. And so she instilled in me, make sure that you manage your money so that if somebody isn't treating you right, you can walk away and hold your head high.
Well, I think that it helps us understand not just the importance of financial literacy and good practices in the terms of I need to keep a roof over my head and the heads of my children. I need to keep food on the table and meet the basic needs. But also being able to manage your finances gives you an incredible empowerment. I mean, that is freedom in many ways.
Absolutely. And it's at every age. I've worked recently with some elderly women who are running into some of the same situations, and it's important no matter what age or stage of life you're in.
You are also a mother, and your daughter was also part of the inspiration for writing this book. Why?
Well, because she, you know, was a sharp young lady. She went to college, she was getting her degree, and then called home and said they offered me a job and had a ton of questions, and which was great. But as I was answering them, I wondered to myself, what about all of the other young women out there? Where are they getting their information? And so I thought about it, and so I went looking for other books, thinking, well, of course, there's got to be some good objective information out there. And what I found was there is some, but it's really big and thick. and not necessarily something a young person would sit down and read. And there was a lot of how to get out of financial trouble you may have gotten in. And then there's a lot of how to handle all of the money you have, but there's not much about how to avoid the trouble so that someday you'll have it to invest. So I saw a gap, and I was telling my husband somebody should write a book. And he looked at me and said, yeah, you should.
Well, and you have a daughter and a son.
Yeah.
And I mean, clearly you've raised your kids to be financially responsible. But why do you think you needed to write a girl's guide to personal finance as opposed to a guide to personal finance?
Well, for one, I think that everybody, regardless of gender, we don't have a strong enough financial literacy. So it's not a problem that just one gender faces, but it is one that I think is more significant with women, partly because sadly, we make less and we live longer. So as a result, we have to save more and manage better just to even make things equal. The other is men still are stronger at or are lean towards more math and STEM sciences. There's still woefully low numbers of women in the STEM sciences, which also tend to align with math and finance. So I really felt like women are still at a bit of a disadvantage when it comes to finances.
And in thinking back, do you feel like when it came to personal finance or preparing your kids for that part of their lives, do you feel like you treated your son differently than you treated your daughter?
You know, we really tried to be even-handed, but I do think we did treat them a little different. It was just assumed that both are equally smart, but that by nature, my son would, you know, gravitate and do really well in advanced math, and he just assumed he would do well. Where my daughter in high school, I think, socially found, you know, there are no social points to be gained by doing well in math. And so despite the fact that her aptitude showed she was really strong in those areas, but that wasn't just something she gravitated towards or felt compelled to, and I think some of that is just social.
Sure. And you also write in thinking about when the kids said, hey, I want to go to the movies. You think that maybe you and your husband were more inclined to hand your daughter money and maybe say to your son, well, OK, where's that money going to come from?
Yes, sadly, I did see that happen a couple times. We always encourage them to find those, but yeah, it was easier or often more, you know, hand our daughter some money. And the other is, you know, for my son, he, one, never wanted to go shopping. I think it's a more of a guy thing. They don't do that. And for him, as long as he had a T-shirt and a pair of jeans, he was fine. But socially for my daughter, you know, she felt that she needed makeup and hair done and other fashion and accessories and other things that go with it. And sadly, that's a lot more expensive. So just sheer carry load, my son didn't require as much money when he was getting ready or going out for a day or for the weekend.
Well, and it's interesting. You spend quite a bit of time in your book writing about that. And I mean, that's a microcosm in your family. And of course, stereotypes don't cover all of us. But there is a lot of pressure on women to spend more money than men, isn't there?
Well, certainly on some things. I think a lot of it goes to, you know, fashion and hair care and makeup and a lot of other, you know, we tend to spend, you know, we talk about the extra 20 minutes or half hour we spend getting ready, but we often don't talk about the extra couple hundred dollars that go into getting ready. It's the clothes that are hanging in the closet. It's the makeup that we had to buy. It's the hairstylist we hired. It's, you know, there's a long list of care that women use and are expected to that men can pretty much wash their hair and go.
So it's not just the time that we spend, but also the pressure to spend money. And of course, to wear something different every day of the week, which is not necessarily a pressure that men face. You spend time in your book taking a look at what a paycheck looks like and breaking down, you know, where the money comes from, where the money's going, what it's covering. You talk about health insurance and employee plan or employer plans and individual plans, that kind of thing. But I want to talk about something that you spend a lot of time on in the book, and that is keeping the money you earn. Tell me what you mean by that and why you feel like it's so important.
Well, I think it's great that, you know, unemployment is at a record low, especially in Iowa. It's I think we've got the lowest unemployment in the nation, yet we don't have some of the best economics for our and current people. And so it's not really an issue that people aren't making money, it's that they're not keeping what they're earning. And there's a lot of factors that go into that, but some of it is just down to choice. You know, what are you spending your money on? And I think there's a lot of things we don't have control over, we need to manage those things we do.
And how do you start? If you have your first job, you're just out of college or just out of high school, you have your first job, that paycheck is coming in every week. What are some of the building blocks that you want to make sure every young person takes advantage of?
Well, first, I think it's a lot about habits and getting started on the right habits when you start making money. So immediately start saving. And I know that's really hard for young people, especially because often they're facing debt, school, college loans, other things. They need usually car and apartment and those other things. But even if it's just a small portion of their paycheck, starting to save. And that's a couple reasons. One is because time's on their side. So as they start to save, it can compound. But even as important, it's a habit. So if you just start, and even if it's a little bit, as statements start to roll around and you start seeing that grow, it's motivating to continue to do it. And once you're in the habit, it just makes it a lot easier. It's like anything. If you're in the habit of eating healthy, then you won't face as big of challenges when something comes along and you need to, you know, do a diet. Habit forming is so important. So I think that's one of the biggest things. The other is, it's a myth. Women know, can understand finance. You don't need to be really strong in math. If you have a calculator and a fifth grade education, you can do all the math you need.
All right, we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I'm talking to Joey Beach. She is the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about personal finance and financial education. We're also exploring the gender gap, why there seem to be more challenges for girls and women when it comes to getting that financial education and managing their money. With me, Nanette Joelle Beach. She is the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. And also joining us now, Pat Brown, who has worked in insurance and finance for 34 years. And recently published a financial literacy coloring book. It's called Color Me Green. She is with us from Ames. Hello, Pat.
Hi, Charity. It's fun to be here.
Oh, it's such a treat to have you on the show, Pat. And I know that you were listening to Joey talk about her mother's experience and thinking about her daughter as her daughter's going out into the world. A lot of people come to you, Pat, when they are in financial trouble. I'm curious about some of the things that you have seen that led you to feel that you needed to gear your financial education advice toward women. And we were talking about young women. What do you find some of the common problems are with young women you encounter?
Well, there's a lot of them. But first, I really want to thank her for having the courage to write that book. It's really important. We're both on the same mission with working with women. And I just need to say, I know young men need this, but young women are very intimidated to find help. They're ashamed because they think they should know this. And as I have worked with young women, I realize that. So I put together this book with very simple beginning concepts so that that would empower women to build on this very basic knowledge. And, you know, you're taught to wash your hands before you eat, brush your teeth, but you're not taught generally these simple, very simple concepts that will make a huge difference in your life.
Well, and you, in your book, Color Me Green, you write quite a bit about credit and right. understanding credit. Joey, you write quite a bit about credit and understanding credit. I mean, Pat, mm-hmm. do you feel like that is the number one pitfall that young women and really young people fall into?
Yes.
All right. So paint me a picture. What are some of the things you've seen people struggle with?
Well, I've had college students come in. Not only do they have school debt, they've gotten these credit cards and don't realize the implications of them. And they come in with $30,000 in credit debt. And I just go, oh, my Lord. And because they don't realize the consequences of using that card, and they don't understand credit score. They don't understand how credit cards and credit scores work. And it's not just the credit score. It's how the credit score breaks down. Well, and because this is can be a eyes glaze over topic, I struggled with, for a number of years, how to put this together to make it interesting. And that's why I came up with the coloring book. So, and I hired just a first-class illustrator so that, you know, if you color these things, they're almost, you could almost frame them. they're fun. But
you should probably frame the financial advice as well.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that. So, anyway, so I've dealt with these young women, and I've had them crying in my office. They won't answer their phone. They throw the bills in the wastebasket.
Really just going into denial, pretending that it's not happening.
Pretending it's not happening. I had one, she said, I can't even tell my brother. He's going to be so upset with me. And they're ashamed. And really, it's unfair because they haven't gotten just these very simple concepts in place. So one of my stories is like, I talk about renter's insurance. That's probably the first thing that anybody being graduated from high school or college, they're going to rent an apartment. And they have no clue what they're buying. If they buy it at all, they think the landlord will take care of them. Well, the landlord's not going to take care of them. And we had a big fire in Ames in one of our apartments. And I had a young man call me. He was not with me, but he was with another company. And he said, you know, first of all, I didn't have enough coverage. He didn't even know that. And then secondly, he said, I couldn't replace things because the kind of policy I had didn't replace my personal property. And then it didn't have loss of use. I had nowhere to go. I had to go to friends. And these are really very basic concepts in a renter's policy. How many young people know that? They don't.
Well, and it's something that a lot of young people just don't even think about. Not just looking at their policy, but getting a policy itself.
Right. And the cost of a policy is about the cost of one pizza a month. And it can make all the difference in when something bad happens.
All right. Now, before we sort of talk about credit, Joey has a lot of thoughts about credit. Our next guest also has a lot of thoughts about credit, I'm sure, and troubleshoot some listener questions as well. If you have a question, please feel free to give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. They can be questions about your own personal finances at any point in your life, or if you're concerned about someone you care about, feel free. Give us a call, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Pat, we were just talking about young people, in particular young women who you've encountered in your work who are really in financial trouble. But this is also, in your line of work, you encounter women who are older who have never managed finances and then suddenly find that they're responsible. Tell me a story about someone that you've encountered later in life who really needed this advice.
I don't want this misunderstood, but a lot of older women have depended on their male partner to mm-hmm. take care of all the money. I just dealt with one last week, and she lost her husband suddenly. And she, fortunately for her, things were in really, really good order. But she said, "Pat, I'm coming to you because I absolutely have no understanding of any of this. And I trust you. I've been with you a long time. I want you to sit down and explain everything to me." And I did. And it went beyond just the insurance. And I mean, I went into some of the kinds of finance things, credit scores, what she needed to look for, what she needed to be aware of in terms of scams. You know, it's just a long litany of all kinds of things connected with it. And it's a relationship trust factor. And it's hard for women. Many men don't understand the lack of confidence women have, or that they are ashamed that they don't know more. And they frankly seek out other women, often in the finance industry, for help.
Well, and Joey, in writing about your mom's experience, part of me wants to say, okay, you know, our roles in the culture at large are changing, are evolving. Maybe not as many women find themselves in a situation where they're completely dependent on a partner for their finances. But I mean, Joey, clearly women still find themselves in that situation.
Well, you're right. So fortunately, a lot of laws have changed so that women who now, if they were in my mother's same situation, would have more protection and would be able to be better off than she was. But at the same time, there's still a lot that goes with it. And knowing what your rights are, knowing what you're going to need financially to cover yourself and or others who are dependent on you is huge. So, and now we've got a lot more people, women, who are in the workforce making good money. So they need the understanding of those concepts so that they can stay out of trouble and take care of themselves regardless of what happens or what their marriage status is.
We're talking about personal finances today and financial education, the gender gap in financial education as well. Although no matter what your gender, no matter what your question, you're welcome to join our conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me is Joey Beach. She is the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. She lives in Ankeny. And Pat Brown, who's worked in insurance and finance for 34 years and recently published a financial literacy coloring book called Color Me Green, is here with us. She lives in Ames. And now I want to bring Barb Wallen into the conversation. She is a family finance specialist for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Hello, Barb.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today. And of course, I mean, we are talking about financial literacy for everyone, and your work through Iowa State University Extension does not break down along gender lines. But I am curious about your thoughts as somebody who works in financial literacy. Do you feel like there is a big gender gap in between men and women and their understanding of personal finance?
There is definitely evidence. I mean, not just anecdotal, but hard evidence of a gap between genders in financial literacy. And there's a whole range of potential explanations for that, and sometimes it's not even worth sorting through the why, although sometimes sorting through the why can be useful. But really, it's just valuable for us as educators and for individuals and for families and for regular educators, apart from financial educators. It's good for people to be aware because women may need a little more encouragement to even take advantage of the opportunities that are available.
Well, and I let's talk about credit, and then we're going to get to the phones because we do have some people who have questions that they would love to ask at 866-780-9100. Pat, I'm going to let you go first when we talk about credit. I know you all have a lot to say. You mentioned credit scores. Understanding credit scores is something that you place a lot of emphasis on. I think that when people give their kids advice, often they're saying, you know, oh, be very wary of credit cards. But you need to have one, don't you, to be able to get that credit score. And that's pretty vital to your financial health, right?
Right, but you don't need 10. And you probably only need one if you really want to think about it. It is, I think, first of all, women need to establish a credit history. And that means getting a credit card in their name, because I've had widows come in, young widows. The credit card was in the husband's name. Of course, she had one based on his credit. And when he died, she no longer had a credit card. So it is important to take out a credit card and to buy something on time. If I've had, I had a couple who had no debt, no mortgage, and they wanted to borrow money to on their car to get a loan. And the bank said, refused them because they said they have no credit history and they need to take out and pay off something in 12 equal monthly statements in order to establish credit history. And people don't realize that. Nor do they realize when they get that 10% off, when they get a second credit card or whatever they buy, that it is lowering their credit score. Nor do they understand how a credit score is put together. For instance, if you want to increase your credit score, you can do it by paying your payments on time. That's 30% of your credit score. If you have all your debt on credit cards, that'll give you a 10% ding on your credit score. It's knowledge like this that is critically important about credit and credit scores. The most valuable asset anyone has is their credit score and their earning power.
Well, and Joey, I'd love for you to weigh in on that as well. You have a lot of advice about how to use a credit card when you're talking about budgeting. So you encourage people to use their credit cards, but to make it part of your monthly budget, right?
Oh, exactly. If they're going to use them, make sure you're budgeting so that when the bill comes, you can pay it all off. Because it really will never matter what the interest rate of the credit card is if you're always paying what's due when it's due. And that goes a long way in establishing a good credit score. And I look at a credit score as like your personal reputation. You want to protect your credit score just like you would protect your personal reputation, because in essence, a credit score is your financial reputation.
Let's go to the phones, 866-780-9100. Karen is on the line in Kellogg. Hi, Karen.
Hi. First of all, if Pat Brown on the air is the Pat Brown that I know and love, hello, Pat.
Hi.
Hear you again.
Hi. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. And thanks, Charity. I was on your program recently as a musician. I have a question about long-term health insurance, Pat. We raised three girls, and one of the things, having, as a woman, you often end up maybe as a primary caretaker of older parents. But at some point, you become the older parent. And learning from firsthand experience what happened with my mother and her dementia, which was quite prolonged, it became very clear to me that my husband and I needed to sign up for long-term care insurance. And I have kind of drilled that into my girls, and I keep bringing it up. As soon as you can pay into a long-term health insurance package, please do, because if you start young, it'll be cheaper. And the statistics are we're going to last longer, but maybe also end up with dementia or something that takes years and years to until you pass away and takes a huge toll on family finances. And I wonder if you can weigh in on including long-term health care planning into financial literacy.
Well, that's a great question, Karen. Pat, what do you think?
Well, it's a complex question because the industry, many companies are no longer selling long-term care because people are living longer. The medical people keep us going. And what it would cost for long-term care is prohibitive, is getting prohibitive. And so a good plan is if you can get a group long-term care through your company and find out how long you can keep it when you retire. That's a good way. But going into the general insurance market, it's difficult to find an affordable plan. And what companies are doing, and it's worth investigating, is they're coming out with a life insurance policy that can be for legacy. It can create cash value, and that cash value combined with the face amount can be turned into a long-term care policy. And this is an alternative the insurance industry has come up with in lieu of the increasing costs or not the lack of availability of long-term care.
I have a feeling we could spend an entire hour talking about this subject.
Oh, yeah.
In and of itself. But we will talk more about saving money for retirement and looking to the future in just a few minutes. We are going to take a short break. With me today, Pat Brown, who's worked in insurance and finance for 34 years and recently published a financial literacy coloring book called Color Me Green. Barb Wollen is here, family finance specialist for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. And Joey Beach, the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. You are welcome to join the conversation with your questions or lessons learned at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at Iowa Public Radio. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. This is Talk of Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Gravitate Coworking, a community of entrepreneurs, freelancers, and remote workers who believe that life is better when you work together. Learn more at gravitatecoworking.com/IPR. Gravitate Coworking. Find your tribe.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, personal financial education. I'm talking with Barb Wollen. She is a family finance specialist for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. Pat Brown, who's worked in insurance and finance for 34 years and recently published a financial literacy coloring book called Color Me Green. And Joey Beach, who is the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. And just before the break, we were talking about long-term care insurance and how difficult that is to come by and some of the options. But I want to turn the subject just a little bit, Joey, to savings, something that you write about. And of course, you encourage people to start saving as soon as they get that first job. That's advice maybe a lot of us got, but very few of us ever took. So give us a little bit of insight, Joey, into when to start saving and the benefits of saving early.
Well, you can never start saving too early because then if something happens, you have something. I think it's also like a lot of things in life, it's about a habit and establishing it, even if it's at a very minimal amount early on. But the real value of it, especially when you're young, is because of this magical thing called compound interest, where when you put money in and invest it or even just save it, and it's earning a little interest and you leave it, the next year it's going to earn a little bit more because it's compounding on itself. And Albert Einstein called it the eighth wonder of the world. And it really is something where money can work for you and you don't have to own a large business or other things to have it work in your favor. You just need to save. So that's huge, especially when you're young. The more you can save, the better off you are, whether it's something for retirement, because I think a lot of people go, oh, well, one, I like working. I don't want to worry about retirement, or that's so far off. But, you know, putting that money aside can be used for a lot of different things. And so you can never go wrong having it.
Well, and you publish some charts comparing, you've got some fictional characters in the book, twin sisters, and they've got a cousin, and you're comparing their different saving strategies, which really illustrates very clearly the benefits of saving early. And I'm curious, Barb, when people come to you and ask for advice, I have to suspect that a lot of people have not started saving early. So if you didn't start saving early, what kind of advice do you have for people about that?
Start saving now. Now is the earliest you can do it. I want to actually go just a step further than what Joey said. The idea of starting, you know, with your first job is great. I want to encourage parents to structure for their kids a savings plan when they're in grade school. I would really advocate for parents, wherever possible, to establish an allowance for children, give children a predictable income. That's what allowances are. Is there a predictable income? It's not payment for services. If you want to pay for extra chores, do that on top of the allowance. But have the allowance as predictable income and require savings, structure the savings, create, you know, maybe two different savings pots, one that's for the long term and another one, I'm saving this because something might come up, you know, next month. And get kids in the habit of saving very young. That matters a lot. That establishes the habit. And when kids have had some positive experiences with benefiting because they had a cushion, they had some money set aside, that will become all the more real to them when they become adults. So I don't want to neglect the role of parents here in helping their children establish the kind of habits that'll make a difference for them in their lifetime.
Well, and
but yes.
Yeah, you
Go
mentioned,
ahead.
Barb, the different accounts, different pots that you can put the money in. And I think that that's a tremendous asset that we have now. When I first started managing my own money, it was something I had to physically do to save the money, to transfer the money to a certain account or something like that, where I, you know, I could get my paycheck automatically sent to the bank, but I had to talk to the bank myself. I couldn't manage my money online. I couldn't automate things. So we have a lot of things that we can take advantage of now, don't we? Technology that makes saving easier.
Absolutely. And we know that anytime we can automate things, it increases our likelihood of compliance. You know, it increases our likelihood of continuing that habit. It's not a decision every month. It just happened. And once the money's out of our spending account, then we are less likely to touch it. But if I have to make the decision whether or not to make the transfer, then I am more likely to be tempted to, I'm going to hang on to that money this month. So yes, having different pots is valuable. And related to that is the need to recognize clearly, potentially with separate accounts or else with some subdivision mentally or on paper within a single account, that you have different savings goals. And so you might be saving for an emergency. You know, you might have an emergency fund, but then you also want or need new tires for your car. So am I going to kill out my emergency fund in order to get my new tires? Well, no, what we really need to do is save for the emergency fund, but save separately for the new tires. Be thinking ahead in that way. So the idea of having compartmentalized savings is another concept people really benefit from grasping.
Here's a question from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. She says, I'm in good financial standing and have a high credit score and my own Roth IRA, so I feel like I'm doing pretty well. However, I'm a bit confused because the debit card I use can function as either credit or debit. I always use it as a credit card, but would like the difference explained. If it helps, I do all my banking with a credit union and get monthly dividends as part of my membership. Barb, can you explain the difference?
The primary difference really is simply how it's processed by the vendor, by the store where you use your card. It's not actually treated as a credit card from the respective credit scores because it's not borrowing money. You're spending money you have in your account. So it using it as a credit card versus a debit card doesn't change. That doesn't really have an impact on your credit score. I often want to ask, which costs the store less? You know, is it going to cost you more if I process it as a debit card with my PIN or if I process it as a credit card with a signature? But it's really more about how the store, the vendor handles it.
All right. So should she be thinking about using a credit card for its impact on her credit score instead?
She could. As long as she's ready to do exactly what was already mentioned, which is to pay the balance in full when the bill comes.
We have this comment from Keith. He says, I found monthly budgeting cash for groceries leads to going to the store for milk and coming home with just milk. Debit or credit card shopping leads to spending 30 plus on a trip for milk. Joey, I would love your comments on that. You write a great deal about budgeting and actually buying what you intend to buy. That's a pretty big hurdle for a lot of people, isn't it?
It is, and I fall into that category. I can't get out of Target for under $50 because I'm always buying things, the household need items, and I don't like to go that often, so I tend to try to stack up when I'm there. And I think it's a valid point, and I'm about budgeting, but I actually am not a big paperwork person, so I don't worry about the exact penny, but here's kind of the pot of money I have in this time frame to use. So, you know, sometimes it's, yeah, I just need what I need right now, and I go in and I get my milk and maybe some bread to go with it. But if you're planning out a little farther, you know, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't pick up other things that are there or on sale, as long as it fits into your larger category, because at the end of the day, you're going to have to eat. And so I'm not the, you know, only pay, you know, exactly what that is, or only buy milk because that's all you can afford that day. Obviously, if you can't afford more than that, you can't. But really, to me, it's more about the broader budgeting items and not worrying about every $2. It's more about, okay, I've got $50 or $100 or whatever that is that I can pay for food for that month. So how do I make that go as far as possible?
And you mentioned you're not big into paperwork. I think that's something that scares a lot of people. Like, oh, am I going to have to sit down and actually balance my budget and track every expense all the time? Now, that can be a great tool for a lot of people, but you don't necessarily advocate that.
Right. I mean, for some people, that works great, and they love a good spreadsheet, and they want to track every dime. And that's great if it works for them. That never worked for me. I was working full-time, raising two children, you know, try to run a home. That's really hard. I literally didn't have the time to do that, and they didn't have a lot of the great online tools that they have today for it. So I knew ahead of time, okay, this is the pot of money that I have to work with for spending this month. And I had to keep track of that. Some of it was mentally, but I had a little wiggle room in there. And as long as I stayed within that, I knew I was good. And that just worked better for me. And I think it really is finding what works best for you, because I don't feel like prescribing a particular solution will work for everybody. Everybody's got to find what works best for them. And sometimes it's a spreadsheet, and sometimes it's, okay, here's what I have to work with. And as long as I stay within that for this month, I'm good.
All right. 866-780-9100 is the number to call with your questions. Joe is on the line in Fairfax. Hi, Joe.
Yeah, good morning.
Hi.
Excellent show. I really appreciate you doing this. But, hey, I'm going to back up, and maybe I'm not backing up, but on this interest rate, you know, I see a lot of these. I'm a senior citizen, and I've been sort of through it, and my wife actually is sharper on this stuff than I am, but it's too bad they don't teach this in school. I mean, because a lot of that stuff they teach in school, I'm not knocking the schools, but they don't use it outside the school. You know, the interest rate, you know, if they miss a payment, say it's interest-free and they miss a payment, well, all that interest goes back on the, you know, you end up paying it. And who hasn't missed a payment at one time or another in their life? But it's just, you know, the young people buy these houses, and the realtors really, and I'm not picking on the realtors either, but that's just business.
So you think we need to be doing a better job educating our young people? I think, Joey, that's certainly something you feel as well, but it's hard to, obviously our schools are doing a whole lot of other things as well. Did you find that your kids got some experience or education on finances when they were in school?
You know, they got some. And writing this book, I really learned just how hard it is. And I got more sympathy for educators because of it, because it is really a hard topic. It's very emotionally charged. There's a lot of things that go with it. And when you're in a public school setting anyway, there's a lot that you have, a framework that you have to be within that's hard. And it's also hard to make it interesting. That's part of why I was more niche focused on mine, because
I wanted to make it as interesting as possible. And I think that's one of the tough parts when you genericize it more. It's less interesting, and then unfortunately, young people may not pay as much attention as they need.
Sure, and I think that for a lot of us, we don't pay attention to something until we absolutely need it. So suddenly you're getting a paycheck on a regular basis, and you think, oh, I should probably know what I'm supposed to do with this. Here's an email comment from Jane in Washington. She says, we used a four-jar system for our kids for whatever money they received or earned. 50% long-term savings, 20% short-term savings, 10% for charity, 20% for quick spend. This may not be an adult plan, but it was a way for our kids to see how important saving money is. And it has worked for us. I'd love to hear your comments on that, Barb.
I love it. I started with something like that with my children and ended up with envelopes instead. But so four envelopes, or I think it was, yeah, I think it was four envelopes plus their little purse, whatever they use. But yes, that training from beginning, and if charity matters, you include that as a category. You have your immediate spending, but then you have your stuff you want to think over. Well, I could tell more stories, but there's not time. That's a terrific strategy. It helps kids learn to plan, and we can do that as parents.
Well, we are nearly out of time. We only have a couple of minutes left. Pat, I'd love to ask you for your parting shot. If parents are listening right now and you've got teens, or if you're a young person, what do you feel like the number one best piece of advice you can give a young person is about managing their money?
Well, a single piece of advice?
Yeah.
I would say I love the envelope idea. It's learning budgeting and the security of getting money into savings, charity. I love that idea because that's the key to everything else we've been talking about, frankly. And then the next steps are to learn about credit cards, the difficulty you can get into them, and learning where you spend your money. And I think where you spend your money is where people get into trouble. And that's why I love that envelope or those jar kinds of concepts, because we spend money and it's gone and we don't know where it went.
Yeah, it just disappears into
the ether. It disappears.
All right. Well, Pat Brown, thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you. Oh, Charity, this has been wonderful. Thank you. I'm in a very familiar studio,
yes.
And it's very emotional.
Oh, well, Pat, it's wonderful to have you on the air. Long, long history with Iowa Public Radio. Pat Brown has worked in insurance and finance for 34 years and recently published a financial literacy coloring book called Color Me Green. Joey, I'm going to give you a parting shot here as well. So you wrote a whole book particularly for young women in thinking about money. There's a lot of great advice in it. But what's the one thing you would tell them to think about?
That the most important equation is income minus expenses, and that will tell you if you're gaining or losing. It's the scoreboard of finances. So if you can keep your expenses under your income, you'll be gaining, and then the game starts tilting in your favor.
All right, and you also want to make clear to people the difference between an asset and a liability. Just because you have a car doesn't really mean you own that car, right?
Absolutely. It's amazing if you look at advertising these days how much they emphasize how you're investing in a vehicle or other things. And it really is a liability unless you owe nothing on it. And even then, it's an asset that's going down in value day after day. So really be careful when somebody's telling you to invest in something. Really evaluate, is this truly an asset that appreciates, or is this going to be something that I'm actually owing more on?
Well, Joey Beach, thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having me.
Joey Beach, she is the author of A Girl's Guide to Personal Finance. And Barb Wollin, thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Barb Wollin is a family finance specialist for Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. We've been talking about personal finance and financial literacy today. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.